This is Meet the Movie Press. It's November 22nd, 2019. On the show today, Joker sequel, that Cats trailer, Star Trek 4 plus Frozen 2, Knives Out, 21 Bridges, and more reviewed. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
This is Meet the Movie Press. It is November the 22nd, 2019. The clock is going to be ticking down. There's a lot to get through today, and it's our last show before Thanksgiving. There will be no show next week because neither of us will be intending to put our pants on.
Right.
Scott Menzel, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. Do you know what? I'm absolutely exhausted.
Dude, I'm so tired, too. I can't wait. In Hollywood, everything shuts down next week, and we're very thankful because we need a break, because right when it comes back after Thanksgiving, it'll be award season and award season and award season, and we'll be running around like madmen.
And we've been at events pretty much every single
night.
At least one event every single night for like the last 2 months.
Yes.
And the last kind of big, aside from obviously Cats and Star Wars, it's 1917,
which we see on Sunday,
and then that's kind of the big awards contender one, the last one that we need to get through. But do you know what? I can see the end of the road is in sight, which is great, and those screeners are coming in very handy.
Oh, yes.
Every movie that comes in, I'm like, oh, I don't have to leave the apartment.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, a lot to get through this week, but obviously a big part of the show, where there was no reason being here if it wasn't for them. The people in the chat, the people who listen to the show and watch the show every single week already in the chat. If you know you're watching the show live, then you are able to take part in the chat section on YouTube. Ricky Davila is in there this morning. Good morning, Ricky. Blackwalk316, The Blair Bitch Project, the other Scott M, and Sarah Brockle, everybody in there. And Kenny U in there as well. Hello to everybody. And obviously Film Nerd Jamie, especially good morning to you. First time Film Nerd Jamie has been able to watch the show going out live as well. Now, before we start, Scott, for those people who don't know who you are, who are you and where can we find you, please?
Hi, you can find me over at weliveentertainment.com. I'm the other editor-in-chief over there. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at the other Scott M.
Okay, Joker back in the news for two reasons this week. A sequel apparently in the works with Todd Phillips, also planning yet another DC character origin movie, and the Joker being the first R-rated movie to cross $1 billion. Right, let's look at the $1 billion R-rated movie. Landmark milestone that it managed to achieve this week with no real surprise. I was going to say, any real surprise to you? Did you think it was going to top 1 billion?
No, not really. I mean, I didn't expect it to build the word of mouth that it has. Mm. I almost think in this case, the mixed reactions really helped fuel this movie's success.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I think it started off at the, you know, Venice, mm-hmm. and it was like praise. Everyone's like, oh my God, best movie ever. And then it went to TIFF, and then it was kind of like more of a mixed. And then, you know, there was all this controversy surrounding the movie with, you know, violence. Oh my God, the violence is going to happen.
Yep.
And I think more and more people started getting excited, and more people were curious about it. And they're like, let me see what all the fuss is about. And there's been so many people who have loved this movie and have went back and seen it repeatedly.
Yep.
And I think that has also helped. It's got so many repeat customers for this movie. It's like an Avengers Endgame in a lot of ways.
And I think it's also because it's really got a lot of people who, don't go and see superhero comic book movies to see it in the movie theater. And also, I know a lot of people who don't often go to the movie theater, who have picked it as one they do want to see on the big screen, perhaps one of five movies over the year that they definitely wanted to see that environment. So I think that's really helped. Do you think the controversy, that obviously there was a lot of controversy surrounding it, actually helped in a major way?
You know, I thought initially, and I think we talked about it on the show, when the violence came out, I thought it was going to actually scare people away from seeing this movie in the movie theater, because that's what happened with The Dark Knight Rises. After that event happened, the movie didn't perform as well. It's weird, because maybe it's because we live in a constant state of fear now.
Yep.
And at, you know, politics and everything that is the way that it is, that people said, you know what, I'm not going to stop living my life. I'm going to go see this movie.
But it's one of those movies as well this year that's really held its audience. I mean, week on week drop off have been
so good.
Enviable from every other studio, from every other, you know, franchise, every other marketplace. It's held screens and the drop off has been low. When, you know, if you go to a movie theater now and you see Joker, it's still got a healthy turnout. It's still got a healthy turnout for a lot of screenings. Obviously, if it didn't have that, then exhibitors wouldn't have it in the theatres. But it has been really interesting. And do you think it is that word of mouth that's really, you know, prevented there being too much of a drop-off? Or is it just because it is genuinely a really good movie?
I think both.
Okay.
And I also think that it has to do with curiosity. I think a lot of people are just curious to actually think about this film and go see it and form their own opinion.
Yeah.
Because I think this is one where, like, the reviews have just been, it's either love it or hate it. There's very few people who've seen Joker who are kind of like, eh, it's okay.
Mm.
It doesn't seem to exist all that much.
Yeah, there's not a lot of that middling.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think when you have reactions like this, that gets someone to go to a theater and say, ooh, I need to make the decision up for myself.
Yeah.
When you have a movie that has very mediocre reviews overall, you know, those are the ones that tend, in history, to not do as well.
Which is a lot of movies right now, because we're kind of in this area where there is so much content, and, you know, a good 60% of stuff that's out there is very much in the meh. It's fine, but it's, you know, it's not a visceral reaction on either end of the spectrum. It's like a great example this week, 21 Bridges. We're going to get to that later in the show. I mean, it's a fine movie, but it's neither brilliant and it's neither bad. It's weird. People in the chat talking about this as well. Blair Bitch Project suggesting a couple of topics in there. As great. As always, Star Wars. Yes, there's always Star Wars news. Always. There's always comic book. Enjoy your turkeys from the Blair Bitch Project. And for those of you who aren't eating meat, enjoy your
vegan turkey.
Vegan turkey?
Yeah.
Verky? I don't know. Ricky Davila in there. I truly hope there's no sequel to Joker. I'd like to see more origin standalone stories in the vein of Joker and other DC villains. Please, no sequel. And Blair Witch Project saying, I don't think anyone predicted 1 billion for Joker. I don't think even Warner predicted 1 billion for Joker. But if there was ever a year that they needed a billion-dollar movie like this, it is this year. So let's talk about the fact that a sequel's in the works. I mean, to be honest with you, as much as I enjoyed Joker, and I did really like it, it's one of my favourite movies of the year, I don't want a sequel, because I'm absolutely fine with this story being left there. I would much rather see Todd look at some other DC character origins. I think those would be great to explore. I just don't genuinely think we need a Joker sequel.
It would ruin it. I mean, that's how I feel about it. Like, it was so special seeing this movie, because
it's lightning in a bottle.
It was, and it, like, there was so much talk about it, and people even, you know, kind of even going into the movie, people were like, this is going to be awful, this is going to be great. It's kind of like the same way that the whole movie's fate has played out. Like, people are just like, it's going to be awful, it's going to be great. And by putting out a sequel, it really just cheapens the movie.
Yeah.
It really does, because the goal and all the messaging in the movie was to spark conversation, to spark debate.
Yep.
And if you're going to make a sequel, it's going to take away from all that. It really does.
Yeah.
And it was a standalone. That's what they wanted to do. They didn't need a sequel.
And also Todd Phillips. I mean, you know, his resume is quite varied. a lot of comedies with a lot of movies in there that haven't really landed well. And I'll be honest with you, the only sequel we've seen from Todd Phillips is The Hangover Part 2.
Mm.
And for me, that is one of the most disappointing sequels of all time.
Oh.
And then The Hangover 3 coming in just behind that as, again, because what you had with that was, it was basically like, let's take everything from the first movie and fundamentally do it again, but set it in a different location. And then people were like, do something different. And then when they did something different for the third one, that still wasn't particularly good. I don't really want a sequel at all. I think explore other characters, but if they did do a sequel, should it be Todd at the helm, or should Todd step aside and let somebody else direct that? What do you think would be the wiser choice? If I was Todd, I would take an exec production credit on it, and I would have someone else direct. I think you need some fresh eyes.
It's hard, because it kind of became his baby in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it could backfire too. So,
yeah.
But again, this is what the problem is when things make money, is that the creative talents at B need to say no. They need to say, like, okay, we're happy this movie did well, but we shouldn't do it. And I feel like, you know, everyone's talking about, is Joaquin Phoenix going to be back?
Mm.
And he signed up for this movie because he was so in love with the script and the material and the way that the character was.
It presented something very different to what's out there.
That I'm almost afraid he won't even sign back up unless it's getting the same level of quality.
Yeah.
So that's also something that Warner Brothers has to be concerned with.
Which is going to be very difficult to do because, like we say, it's lightning in a bottle. A lot of this is first time. It's very sort of organic. It's something that Joaquin spent a lot of time developing. But I think also, you know, there is this. I know there is that temptation because a movie has landed particularly well and has had this general strong welcome. And you know, if your first one can make a billion, unlikely the second one's going to make a billion. But you can certainly get a huge amount of that returning audience. But there's this thing. I think studios need to resist this sequel idea. Just because something works well doesn't mean you have to do that same thing again.
Yeah.
And I just think there are, even if you did in this whole sort of, you know, create this universe, there are so many other characters that you can do similar things with, but not. But differently.
Yeah, and what's really...
You can't do a Joker.
And what's really upsetting about this is the fact that it was... I know people disagree with me on this, but it was a magical experience seeing this movie because of the fact that it was so different than any other Joker version that we've seen before.
Yeah, very much so.
And it was unexpected, and people... Either way, if you loved it or you hated it, it was very unexpected for the viewer.
Yeah.
No one expected it to be this dark. No one expected it to go the direction that it went.
Dark yet accessible.
Yes.
Which is not, the two often don't come hand in hand.
Never. I shouldn't say never, but very, very rarely. Mm. You can't replicate that.
Yeah.
And if you try, you're more than likely going to fail.
Yeah.
And I just leave well enough alone. Mm. And it just takes away from this movie. I can't say that enough. It takes away from the film being what it was.
Yeah.
It cheapens it.
Yeah.
No, So don't do it. And there's so many original ideas in Hollywood, and this is like, you can take, here's an example. This is a great example of how you can take a story that everyone thinks that they knew, do something different with, and it comes across as being a franchise movie, but also something that's original.
Yeah.
So just do that again with all the other villains that you have to pick from. Take a Superman villain. Take another Batman villain. You have all these comic books to go for.
Yeah.
Just take something else.
Give us a good Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
So people in the chat talking about this. Filmer Jamie Phillips denying the sequel report means nothing. He did kind of deny it at one point, but you know, it keeps it. Yeah. Standard operating procedure to lie until deals are closed. Yeah, absolutely. A Blair Witch Project saying, I honestly thought that it would do 400 to 500 million tops. Ricky saying, yep, no one predicted it. I only expected 300 to 500 million max. And also, Blair Witch Project, it's odd that they made this, what made this movie big, Straight Edge Vegan Bell. I love this show, guys. Thank you, Straight Edge Vegan Bell. We really appreciate it. Just watched Mandalorian Chapter 3. It's fantastic. Yes, I know. I've heard a lot of things about that. Sarah Brockle, I saw Dr. Sleep last night. Sarah, let me know what you think about that. Blair Witch Project, Forbidden Fruit is a sweetener. Shazam, previous to Joker, made 365 million. Blair Witch Project. Yeah, no, I mean, I genuinely thought, I mean, Shazam, that was only earlier this year that
I know.
Movie came out. That feels like a lifetime ago.
It really does.
Oh, my God.
I thought it came out last year.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. Oh, God, I just want this year to be over. Cameron Egan, just make it stop. I don't want a sequel to Joker either because it's brilliant and perfect the way it is. Cannot be reproduced. And I think that's the thing. You just don't really want to reproduce it. Blair Witch Project, TP, will be in another hangover situation. Exactly the point that I made. Ricky, it ruined Warner Brothers' reputation to make a sequel and hurt them down the line if they want to take another risk like Joker because the sequel wasn't good. Yeah, absolutely, Cameron Egan. Just pleased for Joker. It was more of a psychological mind thriller instead of a typical visual violent comic book film. Yeah, I think there's so many things about Joker that set it apart that I think are actually really should be lauded. And before we move on, Sky Patterson saying, Simon, I think that Warner Brothers / DC and Todd Phillips should produce films that explore the mental breakdown of DC comic villains. Joaquin Phoenix's Joker cameo. So characters like Ivy, President Lex Luthor, Freeze. Yeah, I think that would be really good. And it's something I would really be interested to see. And there's nothing in this comic book world out there like that. We kind of touched on it with Nolan's Batman. That sort of, you know, the psychology of mania. But it will be interesting to explore. Still not buying Phoenix winning the Oscar. Mike says the guy from Richard Jewell will be a dark horse. I literally tweeted that exact same thing after seeing that movie this week. Paul Walter Hauser, I think, is very deserving of a best act, even though I didn't entirely love the movie. So blockbuster now. Joker is a blockbuster. It's made over $1 billion. Last year when Black Panther was nominated for best film, it's like, you can't, it's a blockbuster. It's mainstream. Would you consider Joker to be a mainstream blockbuster, or is it still just because of the what it is as a movie, it kind of manages to transcend that simple label?
I mean, by the definition of a blockbuster, it's not a blockbuster.
Right.
Because it's supposed to be over $100 million.
Okay.
For the budget. And it's not over $100 million for the budget. It was made for peanuts.
Yeah.
Which is makes it so much more impressive.
Yes, absolutely.
But I kind of think that it's the money, again, which is basically causing all this discussion.
Yeah.
I think if the movie stopped at, like, as people in the chat were saying, about like 300, 400 million, I don't think there'd be any conversation about it. It's just that the studio sees green, they see their other failures this year.
Yep.
And they're kind of like, okay, we can do it we can do this. And Sky Patterson's decision over here, and his suggestion, I guess you should say, of making various films about character breakdowns. Oh, I would love to see that.
Yeah.
And that would be something that really separates DC from Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, just keep on that path.
Which I would welcome.
Yeah, me
I would
too.
Genuinely welcome that. Okay, let's talk about other things that that kind of hit the headlines this week. Another Cats trailer dropped this week, and obviously Tay-Tay's attempt her bid for Best Original Song, a new song that's going to be involved in Cats, dropped this week as well. I know you're a big fan of Taylor Swift. The Cats trailer, when that dropped this week, I'm still very concerned about that movie.
Yeah.
I'm still really concerned about the movie. I cannot... Either it's just a really bad trailer, or two really bad trailers, or there is something potentially horribly wrong with this movie. And I would be then amazed why Universal at some point didn't just go, this isn't working, let's pull the plug, rather than getting this close to the wire, especially with awards season.
What,
your thoughts, first of all, on the trailer?
I have the same reaction to it that I had for the first one. I know, like, everyone's really shitting on this movie. To me, I asked the question, like I asked the last time we talked about this, what were you expecting? Because it is Cats. And the only thing that I can say is that I am disappointed that they're not using actual costumes and instead using CGI.
And I think that would have probably given the whole thing a completely different feel, and the reactions would be completely different.
Right. And it also probably would have helped the budget a little bit too, right?
Possibly. And it would also probably be done by now.
Yes. Yeah. That being said, I'm expecting it to be campy fun.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be great. I don't think it's going to have greater showman magic or things like that.
No.
I think it's just going to be a fun time, and it's going to be a campy delight. That's how I'm, and I think they have kind of grabbed onto that, right?
Yeah.
I think the studio, the Twitter handle, they were having fun with all the reactions and their responses to things. I think they know what they have. The problem is that, again, we talk about risks. $300 million on this?
Yeah.
That's a little risky, and as someone who loves movie musicals...
Likewise.
I'm worried that if this movie does not do well, it's going to start the downfall of, like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do movie musicals, because that's what happens in Hollywood. Like, you have one or two ones that kind of slip up and don't do as well.
Yeah.
And then they're like, maybe we need to pull back and not do these anymore.
And that's the thing. I mean, for me, I think it's great that they're embracing this as something that is sort of camp and fun. But a lot of the success of musical movies like this, and Greatest Showman was a great example of this, actually.
Yeah.
It's getting people who wouldn't usually go and see musical movies into the theater. And there is right now very little, if anything, to appeal to anyone who doesn't really want to see Cats the musical as a movie. Visually, it's not like, oh, I like the look of it, so therefore I'll give it a chance. It's having the opposite effect. People are like, well, this looks worse than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be the real struggle. Do you think it'll make its budget back? That, for me, I don't know.
Internationally. You know, it's going to... it's kind of weird, right? Because you do have all these actors, but I think it's really relying very heavily on Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that she's so popular, it includes her song, and she's playing like one of the main characters. Mm. I think her fans are ultimately going to have to come out and support this movie.
Yeah.
But I do feel like it's going to do much better overseas than it's going to do here.
I think it could potentially do very well in Asia.
Yeah.
The Asian markets, I think, will particularly probably have fun with this. I'm really not predicting, you know, high box office domestically at all. They're going to have to rely on that international. I think it might make its money back. I could see it doing 500, maybe, globally. And I think that's kind of I'm not even particularly comfortable saying that, but I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt, which I think is going to be interesting. But Cats may not be done in time to qualify for Golden Globes, SAG Awards, and more like that. You see, award season is going to be crucial for this movie, because especially when you think what it's going up against in movie theatres, it's going up against Jumanji, it's going up against Star Wars. It's award season really where this needs to kind of have another hook to hang this on.
I agree and I disagree.
Okay. Why?
So if you remember, Greatest Showman came out against Last Jedi Jumanji.
Mm-hmm.
And it had legs. It was like one of the movies that like never opened at number one. When it first came open that weekend, they thought like, oh my God, this is going to bomb horribly. Mm. And it just kept building audiences over and over, and people went back. I mean, I'm one of them. I went back to see that movie multiple times in the theater.
Great experience.
People, they did sing-alongs. They really embraced it. The benefit of Greatest Showman has over Cats is the fact that it was an original musical.
Yeah.
It had Hugh Jackman, and it cost half of what this movie cost.
Yeah.
Actually, even like one-third. I think it was like under 100.
Under 100,
for that movie. So when you put those things into the category, that is what Cats can hope for. The problem is that the budget is really going to hurt that, and I don't think it has the star power. I mean, it just doesn't have the star power. I mean, yes, we all love Jennifer Hudson. She has a great voice. Taylor Swift, you know, people are on the fence about her, you know, but she, you know, you like her voice, you hate her voice, you like her, you hate her, whatever. But there's no selling person for this.
Yeah.
You know, Hugh Jackman and then Keala Settle.
Yep.
You know, really in that you got the Broadway star and you got Hugh Jackman in that one.
Yep.
This one you just kind of have like these fan groups of these actors or these singers. And I don't know if it's going to translate. Cats is dated. Yeah.
It's a great ensemble cast, but again, even the sum of the parts don't make the whole for me.
Right.
And there are some people in there. I mean, you've got the likes of, again, Idris Elba, someone that everybody appears to really like. But then you've got the likes of James Corden in there. And I know James, and I like James, but I'm also very well aware that he is... I described him to someone the other day as the cilantro of the entertainment world. You either love cilantro or you hate cilantro. And it's like there's not really... Nobody really tolerates cilantro. Cilantro intolerance! No, yes. Nobody really tolerates cilantro. You either like it or you don't. And James Corden, I think, is, you know, can for some people be a massive draw and others a massive turnoff. And I'll be honest with you, he's on full Corden in this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's gone full Corden. So if you're if you see the trailer and you're undecided and you don't like him, you're like, oh, I'm avoiding that like the plague.
Yes.
So I think it'll be really interesting. But yeah, like you say, I think this will be very lucky to sort of draw 500 internationally. And I can see it topping out. And I think it needed that awards buzz to persuade people potentially. Or, you know, they needed that water cooler moment. So they need to see it because they know everybody in the office is going to be discussing it.
This is Jeff in the booth, producer. Hey. Yeah. The thing that kind of appeals to me about this is like the chance to kind of hate love something. And sometimes around Christmas, there are so many awardsy movies that you don't want to go see like a really well-made but depressing family drama. And, you know, if I'm a family in the Midwest and it's December 26th, I'm kind of like, F it, I'll go watch this crazy Cats movie. So I think it could perform better than we're expecting purely because it's so bonkers. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
You see, for me, I think that's quite interesting because I think those same people, if they have one family outing that's going to cost $100, they're going to go for a Star Wars or a Jumanji over a Let's Have Fun with the Cats. I think will find that audience, but when it's out of theatres or when everybody's done and dusted with seeing the movies that they want to see. And it's going to be that tail bit, I think, that's going to be... it's interesting. It's an interesting point of view, though. I don't entirely agree with it, but it's an interesting point. Sky Patterson, Simon, do you think Universal's Cats will fail at the box office, do not have a strong wide appeal, poor story, odd CGI visual effects, and poor marketing? Why wasn't this a streaming service film? Do you know what? I think actually making this, that's a good point that I hadn't thought of. If I was Universal, I probably would have dropped this on a Netflix on Christmas Day. And then if you're, people are more, when they are not going to be out of pocket, they're less demanding. And I think, had they done this as dropping on Christmas Day, everybody's going to watch Cats on Netflix on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Even if it's campy shit fun, then people would be tweeting the fuck out of it and all of this stuff. I think that would have been a much better sort of way to approach this. And this is the second holidays now where Universal are releasing a movie. Second year on the trot where they've released a major movie that they're kind of having to change their messaging on. Last year was Marwin, you know, which everybody thought was potentially awards contender, and then when it came out, it was really not. So it's an interesting positioning for them. But we'll see.
I'll never forget Marwin. That's like gonna be like that
was our
movie.
Own personal fucking war zone. That yeah, was, wasn't it? God, that was so disappointing.
That movie was so heartbreaking.
Never had publicists apologize when you come out of a screening before. Yeah. Sweet baby Jesus, says Senor Nerds. Jesus, I'm confident the prescription medication I'm taking are making me want to see this Cats trailer. I think that's crazy. James Corden is kind of like the Graham Norton clone. Yeah, kind of. Corden is fine. Yeah, see, it's, you know, it's... Graham Norton is better than... Yeah, but Graham Norton's not in it.
No.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Okay, let's move on to another topic that got a lot of people expressing very clear opinions this week. Star Trek IV will now be written and directed by Noah Hawley. Okay, so first of all, very interesting choice. A very interesting choice. Would not have had him on a list of names at all to do with this or pretty much... a lot of other projects. Star Trek IV as well, we know this has been sort of off and on for a little while because of, you know, cast issues and disagreements or whatever. Star Trek IV, a wise idea full stop? Or just sort of let this one...
This is the nail in the coffin.
Okay.
This is the nail in the coffin. Okay. I mean, I don't love the politics on film Twitter at all. But, I mean, there's been this trend that has been ongoing that people have always called directors out and Hollywood out is the white men fall upward thing. And, you know, I seen Lucy in the Sky, unfortunately.
Yeah. Which is good because nobody else did.
Right, right.
It literally did, like...
Yeah, they got my money. I actually paid for a ticket at TIFF, so they got some money from
cool.
it. But my God, like, why? When I saw this news, not that guy, right? Because, like, this is the guy who walked out in that movie at the Q&A and was like, I don't know if I'm going to be making another movie anytime soon. Before the movie even played to the audience, basically saying to the audience,
sorry.
I know this movie is not that good.
Yeah.
And to kind of give him a big franchise movie like this... Why?
Yeah, but I mean, I agree with you on that. I'm also thinking that potentially could this be where we were at with Fast and Furious after Tokyo Drift, where Fast and Furious did well, 2 did okay, 3 was not particularly well received, and then you had Fast and Furious 4, and that kind of completely reinvigorated the franchise and was a massive success.
But do you think that guy's going to do it?
No, I don't.
The Tarantino one would have done it. It would have been something different that would have done it.
Yeah. Or even a brave... Even if it didn't do it, I think it would have been a brave nail in the coffin. This, I think, is too big of a risk for me. I don't know... I just don't get a good feeling about this at all.
No.
And it's also a director who I don't think... People who already... And Star Trek is one of those franchises that has always struggled somewhat when it came to its big screen outings, because of the Star Trek fan base is considerably different to like the Star Wars, which is carried on by a completely different form of sort of love for that. These have always struggled, and it's a director who's not like going, oh well, it's a J.J. Abrams,
right.
or a, oh, it's a Jon Favreau, or oh, it's a blah blah blah. I know they did this. You don't have to go, I have, in that director we trust, that draw that name, like a Spielberg or someone, or a Tarantino, when you go, oh, it's a blah blah film. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going, oh, it's a Noah Hawley movie.
And Star Trek, you know, here's the problem with Star Trek, you know, as someone who grew up watching Star Trek, you got so used to watching them on the small screen, mm-hmm. okay? So you were used to watching the original series, Next Generation, on the small screen.
Where it continues to thrive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's doing well. I mean, people have mixed feelings on Discovery, but mm-hmm. it's still doing well in ratings. You know, it's been very successful for CBS, the All Access.
And people are psyched for Picard next year. Yeah.
So when you have a movie, and then the first couple of movies did fairly well. Mm. I mean, they weren't gangbusters, but they did fairly well. You know, you had the Star Trek, the motion picture, Wrath of Khan is a classic. Everyone always mentions that. You know, and then you started going down with The Undiscovered Journey or whatever the heck that movie is called. You know, and then they did Generations, which was like a train wreck. And then, oh, my God, they just kept getting progressively worse as they went on. And then they did this reboot, which fans of the original series were not really sold on, and then like it was harder to sell that to a new generation.
But I love that though.
I enjoyed those too, but like those also, I felt like that last one really like.
I liked Beyond.
I thought it took a step down.
Yeah, I liked Beyond, but I do agree that it was taking it in a different thing. I just don't think there's the hunger for Star Trek 4.
There's not, and especially not with him.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, you know, maybe he's a great, you know, maybe he will be a great director one day, but I think he has to, like, do some other movies first to kind of prove his worth.
Yeah.
Before you give him a big franchise movie. Again, let's use the Ava example. She's great at making independent films, powerful Netflix series. Wrinkle in Time?
Not a good movie. And not a good move either for her. No. It's really, you know, kind of, I mean, I know she's in the middle of another major project right now, but I think that is going to be, and unfortunately, again, this does go back to the thing about, you know, some men or people in the industry being able to fall up. It's like Ava's going to have, you know, one more chance to deliver a big blockbuster movie, major studio, large budget movie. And then people will, if she can't, and I hope she can, because I love her vision.
Yeah.
And she's an amazing filmmaker and you know, and a great runner. But, you know, she won't get that opportunity. You know, and I think that's a bit of a shame. Okay, a couple of other things I want to touch on very quickly before we move on to. Got a lot of movies to talk about this week. Henry Cavill saying he's not done playing the Man of Steel. There's a lot of justice to be done for Superman, saying this week. And obviously we'll talk briefly about the Snyder Cut this week, despite the director and cast wishes. Warner Brothers has no plans to release the Snyder Cut. Okay, first of all, Henry Cavill saying he's not done playing the Man of Steel. Is it just Henry Cavill that doesn't know that he's not Superman anymore? Because, I mean, Warner have been very quiet on this. And usually when it's like, no, we haven't made a decision, there's something. And there's been nothing.
I feel like he really wants to stay on board with this character.
Right.
They just need to get a good director to give him one really good movie. Mm-hmm. And then I think he'll be fine. But the truth is, again, going back to Superman.
Yeah.
In the 80s, Christopher Reeve, like it was a big deal. But again, those movies went on, they started getting worse. And there's just not this, they don't have the same momentum as like a Batman movie.
Yeah.
They don't. The one what was the one with Kevin Spacey where he played Lex Luthor?
Oh, Superman Returns.
Yeah, that one didn't do very well. Man of Steel,
Man of Steel, I genuinely like that movie.
I do too.
And I like Henry Cavill as Superman.
I do too. And then the next one, I don't know. I mean, he just, these all come down to scripts and directors.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to superhero movies, I don't know why, because you can make an actor pop if you have good material to, like, elevate him.
100%. We see it all the time.
So I think they're smart for not letting him walk, if that really is the case. Mm. They just need to make sure they do it right the next time. And they've been able to do that. Like, DC is definitely on the rise. They are getting up there. They just need to do this right. But I don't know how they're going to, because I feel like there's always this love-hate relationship with Superman movies.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to appealed to fans.
I mean, I genuinely think somewhere, if they pitched it somewhere between The Darkness of Joker, but gave Superman another standalone movie. Because really, I mean, obviously, you know, Batman versus Superman, Justice League. For me, Superman wasn't served particularly well in either of those movies. I think he's a great character standalone. And I would love to see another Superman movie. Man of Steel is a movie that I went to see like two or three times in movie theaters, and I actually really enjoyed it. So for everybody that says you're a DCU hater, actually, I really like the Spider-Man, the Superman movies. And I like Henry Cavill as Superman, but I just don't know. I think there's going to be so many things, and I think Joker has been a reason for this, where Warner are being given reasons to go back and revisit decisions they've made in the past and recast. And I think one of the few people who are probably safe are Aquaman and Wonder Woman. I think those are two that will not be recast.
No.
But now Batman's been recast. I think Superman, it would not surprise me if they did a recast on that. You know, they're willing to obviously change Jokers.
Yeah. You know. I mean, it's also, you know, Ben Affleck as Batman was also during a time where, like, he was going through a lot of personal stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, true, true.
You know, so I don't even know if he really got a fair shake at the character.
True.
And it was, like, the odds were stacked against him in a lot of ways. Like, his personal life and then all this stuff. Like, people just had this hatred towards Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
That didn't help.
It didn't help?
Yeah. So I don't know. But, you know, I feel like with the mixed response from Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Is it fair to give him another? You know, like I kind of want to see him get another chance. Like maybe give him one and done kind of thing.
I would give him one and done.
Yeah, like let him have one more.
That swan song, that final hurrah.
Yeah, and if he's able to, this is a case where like if he's able to make over $1 billion.
Yeah,
then keep him on.
Yeah. Absolutely fine. I don't think that's going to happen, though.
No.
I don't see that happening. So very quickly, Snyder Cut. Release it. Don't release it.
I want this damn movie.
You do?
I do. I want this damn movie.
See, I'm really indifferent. It's like, I actually don't care.
Oh, I really want it. I do, because I saw the Justice League, we all know. Like, I enjoy the movie, but I think it's a mess of a movie because you can tell that the studio and Whedon, they messed up the vision of what it was setting out to do. And you can totally see the tone shifts and everything like that.
Yeah.
And I just think if the pieces are there, even if it's not 100% fully, like all the CGI is not done,
yeah,
just put it out.
Yeah.
Like I remember when this movie opened, I emailed the Warner Brothers reps and I was like, just put the freaking movie out.
Yeah.
Just do it in 2 weeks. Do a limited run, whatever you have to do. Let people see it.
Yeah.
I think it's so unfair to Zack Snyder. I really do. Like, the fucking guy, like, went through all this trauma during the time of that release.
Yep.
And then for them to kind of, like, not even let him have, whether the movie's good or not, not to let him have his true vision be seen.
Yeah.
I think that's why there's all this passion for it.
If it's there, I would watch it. I'd be very curious to see it. But I have to say, it's like, release it or don't release it. It makes no difference to me. I'm indifferent. But if it was there, I would definitely like to see it. And I am curious to see what his vision is. But I don't really have any strong feelings either way. Some chat before we talk about box office and move on to the movies for this week and next week. Yash saying, Cavill's going to be too old soon. I think he's got a few more years in him. Blair Witch Project, does Henry use his Superman costume as pajamas? Yash, he's 38, but he was awesome in Fallout and Man from U.N.C.L.E. He was great in Man from U.N.C.L.E. Yeah. He's certainly fit and healthy, so I think he's got a couple of years left. Yash, Cavill is such a great actor. They should give him another chance. I think so. Give him another Superman movie. The Blair Witch Project, I think Cavill took that double from Ryan Reynolds. Let's say Snyder Cut apparently had a black suit evil Superman. Yash saying, Blair Witch Project, if the Snyder Cut exists, why not release it? Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for them not to release
it. I think it's something with Warner Brothers. I think there's something that would come out.
Yeah.
See, this is what I think the fear is. Mm-hmm. The fear right now is that if they release that and it actually does well, and let's say people do like it, what are they going to say?
Yeah.
What? And then there might be all these doors that get opened because everyone's going to go to Zack Snyder and whoever else was producers and things on this movie. Why didn't we see this cut originally?
Yeah.
It's a very iffy road. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that we don't know, and I'm just assuming right now.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, like, if it is good, what
it's a very
kind of
public misstep. Yeah, yeah. It's a very public misstep.
And they don't want that.
Yeah.
They don't want that.
Okay, and one other bit of news before we go on to this week's big releases and box office. RoboCop Returns is now in the hands of the Little Monsters director, Abe Forsyth. I haven't seen Little Monsters, but I know Ashley, your wife, is a big fan of Little Monsters.
Yes, it's great.
Which is on Hulu now, right?
Yes. It's on Hulu. You should watch it if you haven't seen it. Lupita Nyong'o is fantastic.
And Josh Gad's in there as well, who's obviously got another movie coming out this week.
Maybe.
A little one, just a little one. But RoboCop Returns, I mean, I love RoboCop. You know, I didn't like the other movies and I didn't like the TV show. And I'm kind of like, we do have the original movie, which is awesome. And then there was the remake that was terrible. And I'm just like, I don't know.
This guy shouldn't do it.
No.
It's not, again, it's not in his wheelhouse. He hasn't proved himself yet.
It could be a career killer rather than a career maker.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, I get why he would be excited to do it.
Who wouldn't? I mean, somebody came to me and like, make a RoboCop movie. It's like, fuck yeah. Right. But that doesn't necessarily mean it should be made.
No.
People in the chat continuing to talk about Snyder Cut and obviously thoughts on Superhero and Henry Cavill. Sky Patterson saying, I think that a Chris McQuarrie, Karen Kusama Superman film or a Patty Jenkins, Alan Heinberg film featuring Henry Cavill, Amy Adams and Yara Shahidi could be cool. Ooh, yeah, Yara Shahidi. Absolutely. I do love her. She's great. She's also really cool. Okay, cool. Let's talk about box office. A couple of big ones coming out this weekend because it's Thanksgiving here in the US next Thursday. So there's a lot of new releases. Frozen 2 is out this week. Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, 21 Bridges. Dark Waters also hitting theaters. And then next week, Knives Out. Okay, let's have a look at Frozen 2. That's probably going to be the top movie this week. Posted 8.5 million for Thursday evening previews, behind the 9 million on previews for Finding Dory. And it trails the 12 million for Toy Story by 3.5 million. Previews last night, Thursday, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood took 900,000 on Thursday night, which is okay. I kind of predicted around a million. And 21 Bridges took 700,000 during Thursday night previews. Really, Frozen is looking like it's going to be top of the box office. No real surprise there. A Box Office Mojo predicting 120. I think somewhere between 115 and 125.
Yeah, sounds fair.
Seems about right. Although, you know, we'll talk about this in just a second, but the buzz is just very quiet on the street for this movie, despite the fact it's Frozen. Everybody appears to have been waiting for it for years. Ford versus Ferrari, probably going to take second place. It's currently number one. Box Office Mojo predicting 18 million for that. Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, 17 million in third place, followed by 21 Bridges with just under 10 million in fourth place. And Playing with Fire, the John Cena movie that nobody wanted, including John Cena, is 4.5 million. That's kind of hanging there. I mean, it's going to have a couple more weeks. And then I think it's going to disappear. But Charlie's Angels is languishing in the lower end of that. Joker still holding tight. Last Christmas, for a Christmas movie to be predicted to be number nine in the box office 4 weeks before Christmas is amazing. But there you go. Amazing, unlike the movie. And The Good Lie, which I've heard mixed things about, is rounding out the top 10. Okay, let's have a look at these movies. First of all, let's talk very quickly about Dark Water.
Okay.
I saw it. I got a screener.
Oh, okay.
Which is good. So I saw that yesterday. I know they're pitching it for award season for a number of ways. I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was... It's no Aaron Brockovich. It just wasn't... It didn't go hard enough for me. I mean, great performances. Anne Hathaway and Mark Ruffalo. And it's great to see Tim Robbins back as well in a nice role. It's fine. It's an interesting thriller, but it really wasn't... It lacked a punch for me. What did you think?
I was surprised by it. I really enjoyed it. I didn't expect anything from it at all.
Yeah.
I felt like Focus just kind of threw it out there and hoped that it stuck.
Yeah.
You know, they started pushing this movie like about a month ago.
Yeah.
You know, after they didn't really get the buzz they wanted for Harriet. You know, they kind of like expected Harriet to make all these big moves, and it kind of has fallen. You know, it's done okay at the box office, but
yeah,
people have not been kind to that movie.
No.
You know, Dark Waters for me though. Oh God, what's his name? I can't believe I'm just blanking on it. Todd, who's the director of this? Todd Haynes.
Yes.
Todd Haynes, I think is a great filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
He always does something different. He's very between Wonderstruck and Carol and now this. Yeah. Three very different movies. This one, I think he plays it very straight. It's a very forward. There's nothing really spectacular about the direction, just very simplistic. It's
competent and safe.
Yes.
And consistent.
Mark Ruffalo's passion in front of the camera and behind the camera on this really shines through. And I feel like you can tell that he's very passionate about this story.
Yeah.
And I think what really sold me on this movie was the fact of how it's really what he uncovers in this movie is still affecting every single one of us. And it makes me think about how many more people have cancer and illness, and if it's tying into what is being revealed to us in this film.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's so important to see. Do I agree with you that it's not really a movie that I'm going to push really hard for awards? 100%. I think it has, maybe if the actor field wasn't so full this year, I would say maybe Mark Ruffalo has a chance. But to me, the reason you go see this is to see the message and like learn, because I'm sure a lot of people don't know about this.
And the story is great. The idea behind it is really good. It's a really interesting story. But yeah, like I say, it's just, I think it could have been, it lacks a dynamism or a power that I would really want to see from something, especially given the, especially given Ruffalo, who can do, who can convey that so well, and it's really left to him to do this. But yeah, I mean, it's fine, it's good, but it's, again, for me, it's nowhere near like top 10 of the year level stuff. It's serviceable and competent, and interesting, but that's
I think what's interesting about this movie is that it's not a flashy film.
Yeah.
It's not like a really big like buzz movie.
Yeah.
It's one that you should see just for the importance of the story being told.
Agreed.
And I think people don't know enough about this story.
Yeah,
and,
no, 100%.
And it's very important because it probably has affected you or your family in some way. I mean... I've never like seen a movie in recent memory where I literally went home and checked my pots and pans because I was so nervous whether I had something
interesting
of like Teflon in my house. You know, because my mom has cancer, and I'm thinking like, is it something where she used these pots and pans her entire life, and this is the result of it?
Yeah.
And will I get it now because of that?
Yeah. No. Absolutely. It certainly does. That's actually probably one point actually that I completely didn't consider, but it's actually really true. But it's worth checking out. It's certainly, you know, but I don't know whether people will rush to the theaters for this. Talking about another movie.
It's not a movie. People are not going to rush the theaters.
No. 21 Bridges, another movie that's fine and serviceable and, you know, it's enjoyable. But it's unremarkable.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about a movie that should go straight to streaming.
Yeah. This 21 Bridges is a great example of that.
Yeah. I mean, this feels like an late 90s, early 2000 direct to DVD action movie that would have starred Bruce Willis, but instead, for some reason, stars Chadwick Boseman, who is a producer on the film, as well as the Russo brothers. I mean, that was more shocking to me than anything, is the level of talent. You have the guy from If Beale Street Could Talk in this movie.
Yes, Stephen James.
I'm watching this movie, and I'm seeing all these actors, and I'm like looking at the material. I'm like, this is like something you would put on demand.
Yep.
Why are these people in it, and why do they put producing credits behind it?
Well, you're 100% right on that. And it's basically, it's a thriller about, you know, Chadwick Boseman is a cop who's looking for two cop killers, and they shut down the 21 bridges of Manhattan so that they can catch them on the island before dawn, which, I mean, I like as an idea, to be honest with you. It's good. But it's actually something, I wrote a piece for Forbes on this. I spoke to Sienna and Stefan about this. Not Stefan from SNL.
Yeah,
Stefan, who's in this again, Beale Street and a number of other things last year, and the androgynous element, the undefined element of all the characters, I actually pointed it out to both Sienna and Stefan and said, "Look, Chadwick Boseman is a cop. The fact that he's black is not really referenced, and, you know, his family story is only referenced in the fact that his father was also decorated a cop. Nothing is made of Sienna Miller by the fact that she's a woman in a man's world and a single mother and blah, blah, blah. None of that is put on the character. And Stefan is like, Stefan is a criminal on a redemption journey, but the fact that he's black is not like, he's black and from the wrong side of the tracks. It's one of the few times that it is so completely vanilla that all of these characters could be played by anybody. Sienna Miller's character was originally written for a man, but they took her and they put her in it, and she was interested in the character, so they flipped it to being a woman. And it's because it's a blessing and a curse by the fact nothing is put onto these from these sort of background stories. They're not drawn in that way. And I think because of that, as much as it actually helps because it doesn't put this story onto them, it doesn't really put a story onto them. These are just people doing a thing in a thing. And they're just doing their jobs. And there's nothing really sort of to build the meat on those bones. Refreshing to see, because, you know, those tropes are avoided. But also, then you have no tropes.
It didn't do anything for me at all. I mean, this is literally like, I sat there for whatever, the hour and 45 minutes, and I just went like this the entire time. Because there's no excitement in this movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing that stands out. It's predictable. I'm just sitting there and I'm watching these actors who, and I'm like, you guys should be in a better movie. You deserve better.
Yeah.
And I agree with your points, but like, give them something to do. And like, I know this is a joke. Everyone jokes about this movie because it's called 21 Bridges, but it's like, have something happen on a freaking bridge. Show us some bridges. Like, it should have been District 85 or whatever the district was that they found out a big plot reveal about in the movie. That's what the movie should have been called.
Yeah.
Because at least it was like, it actually served some reference. They mentioned it once that they're shutting down the bridges, but nothing ever plays out. There's nothing in the streets. There's not, like, it's just,
But also they called it a different number of bridges. I think it was like 17 bridges. I'm like, where the fuck did you get 4 extra bridges from? But yeah, I mean, it's fine. You know, I enjoyed it. It reminded me, and again, this is something we talk about in this piece for Forbes that I wrote. It reminds me of cop movies from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, where it was like, it was just cops doing cop thing, cops and robbers. But again, you know, there's not really anything else. It's fine, you know? It's fine.
And no one's, again, this goes to show you that it doesn't really matter who's in a movie. Where is this movie coming in? Where is it ranking on the box office?
It's ranking, they're saying it's going to be fourth. Fourth behind A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
I mean,
with a take of about 10
million. With the actors involved with this, you know, Chadwick coming off of Black Panther, wouldn't you expect this movie to do better? It's not going to. No. I actually think it might even underperform those numbers.
I think it's going to be very interesting to see how audiences sort of engage with it. There's just not. I think people are interested to see the movie, but I mean, someone was just saying in the chat, 21 Bridges. This is from Sky. 21 Bridges looked interesting to me, but definitely seems like a streaming service movie. And we touch on that in the piece because Stefan's like, he's really pleased, and Sienna took it knowing that it was going to be a theatrical release. If it was streaming, I don't think she would have done it. And Stefan was like, it's nice to have these movies that are these middle ground movies, mid-budget, middle ground movies that are getting into theaters these days, because they do, a lot of them just get put to streaming. But to be honest with you, I mean, I don't know whether it really warrants being in theaters, but I mean, you'll get the scope and scale, but there's a lot that you could probably watch when it's streaming. We've got just under 10 minutes left on the show, so A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, let's talk about that very briefly. A movie that everybody was like, oh my god, this is going to be an awards movie, and that has quietened down a lot. I think Tom Hanks, who's great in this, I think it could potentially still get a nod come awards season as Mr. Rogers, but I don't think he's going to win, and a lot of people are not exactly responding favorably to the Matthew Rhys storyline in this. It's less of a Mr. Rogers movie and more of a redemption story that also has Mr. Rogers in it. I thought it was fine. I enjoyed the movie, to be honest with you. I did enjoy it, but it's not what I was expecting, and it's not as good as the documentary. Your thoughts on this?
This was my most anticipated movie of the year.
I know.
And I went to this at Toronto at the world premiere. I made sure that I went to the world premiere screening, even though I missed out on two other movies. And it did not meet my expectations.
Okay.
But I think it's being horribly mismarketed. I think it sells this movie as the Tom Hanks is Mr. Rogers movie.
And that's not the movie you get.
And that is not the movie you get. That being said, Tom Hanks is great. He captures the mannerisms and the essence of Mr. Rogers.
Yep.
And every time that he's on screen, the movie goes from like a 5 to like a 9. The problem is Matthew Rhys. He's such a downer and such an ugly and depressing character that I know what they're going for, being the polar opposite, but he's just such a downer, and everything in his life is so negative that even the moments that are very powerful, there's a diner scene in this movie where it's like a moment of silence that I think is incredible. I haven't seen this movie since Toronto. I still remember that scene. I thought it was so emotional and powerful that you would hope that something would have came and changed after that. Yet the character just goes back. And I understand that people don't change overnight and it takes some time. I just never felt like the character even remotely grew. Yeah. As the movie went on.
There's no moments of clarity. There's no coda. There's no benchmark. There's no turning point.
Yeah, and it just kept going and going and going with that. And it's like this movie would probably be, hated, universally hated if Tom Hanks wasn't in it. I really feel like if you took this story, took Mr. Rogers out of it,
you wouldn't see it.
No one would see it. No one would see it. And the sad thing about this movie is, after Won't You Be My Neighbor, which I still think is one of the best documentaries ever freaking made.
And I'm still amazed that didn't get Oscars last year. I'm still amazed because it would have won. It just fucking confuses me how that wasn't on the shortlist.
I don't understand either.
Just crazy.
But the fact that that movie was so great and like told you all this interesting things about him, that you had the perfect time to make a Mr. Rogers biopic. Which is what people want.
Yeah, and I think audiences are going to be pissed if they turn out for this and they're expecting a Mr. Rogers biopic, which, again, the Mr. Rogers element is very much something that's been put to the fore on this, not the Matthew Reese character.
Oh, the marketing.
Yeah, and then you go and it's not that movie. It's really not that movie. I thought it was fine. You know, I didn't dislike it kind of as much as you did.
I think it's fine, too.
Yeah.
The thing is just that, again, my expectations were so high for it. And, like, again, I was expecting something different.
Yeah.
You don't market a movie and tell me it's going to be this, and then I go see it, and it's about this other character that I don't care about.
Especially when you're paying $20 a ticket, and you'll be pissed. People in the Mr. Rogers is Marvel, right? Lol, Xena Hour. Come on. That's ridiculous. TCU, clearly. Eon 001. I have no real idea who Mr. Rogers is. More of an American icon. Absolutely. Eon is from the UK. Yeah, I mean, I knew Mr. Rogers because I have always been fascinated with American popular culture, so I know, but I guarantee in non-domestic markets, people are going to wonder who the fuck Mr. Rogers is. When I was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where was I?
Pittsburgh.
And I went to see, I went to a museum there about a year ago, and they had a big Mr. Rogers thing. And my wife, who's got dual nationality, really had no idea who Mr. Rogers was. And I was like, I loved it. But yeah, not, it's fine. You know, I don't think this is going to get the awards love it perhaps was perceived that it would garner. Maybe a nod for Tom Hanks. But let's talk about a movie that's coming out next week, because obviously it's Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So we're not going to be here. Don't forget to give those thanks, everybody. Knives Out. This is Ryan coming back after, obviously, Last Skywalker. This is him coming up for air and doing something that was just going to be a fun thing to make. I had fun with this movie, but I didn't love this as much as some people did. I really enjoyed it. For me, it's a 7, possibly an 8 out of 10, but it's not a 10 out of 10 movie for me. For no particular reason, I just enjoyed it rather than loved it. Your thoughts on this? I mean, the cast is amazing.
Yeah.
Cast is amazing.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this was the biggest surprise out of Toronto for me this year.
Interesting.
I went to see this, and I was kind of blown away because I think we go as critics and as people in the industry that whenever we talk about a comedy that's a murder mystery, we always go to Clue. And I actually think that this movie's better than Clue. I really, really do.
Interesting.
And I think what Ryan was able to do with this film and bring it into modern times, but yet still captured the essence of, you know, the old school murder mysteries, whether it was Columbo or whatever, Agatha Christie. I think that he was able to kind of blur those lines perfectly.
Mm.
And the cast is phenomenal. And the dialogue that comes out of some of these characters' mouths is great. I mean, Toni Collette has this line about influencers, Daniel Craig's whole bit about donuts. I mean, there's just great things about it.
It's one of the best written movies of the year.
Oh, 100%. It should get screenplay.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have a clever screenplay. Screenplay and cast is where I'm really voting for this movie.
Interesting.
Because I think you can't, even though everyone loves Avengers, this is a better cast. Like, in terms of, like, cast, like, working and interacting with one another and being so different, this is a strong
for
cast.
For me, for screenplay, I think it's this, it's Joker and it's Rocketman.
Yeah.
Screenplay for me this year.
Two Popes.
Two Popes.
Two Popes. Really strong writing.
Really strong writing, actually. Damn it! Knives Out. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this, and I've got a fun interview with Ryan coming up on Forbes next week, which is you know, will make interesting reading, hopefully, for people. But Knives Out, it's just a really good, fun, entertaining movie. It's just a very reassuring movie.
It's different, too.
And it's one of those movies where I don't think there's any reason for someone to dislike it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody's going to come out with it with an adverse opinion going like, well, that was shit, or it wasn't very funny, or because it has all the tones that it has, and it has numerous tones in there, are all perfectly balanced. For me, it's like a really nice cocktail of a movie. It's great. I mean, there's really nothing to say against this movie, but I just didn't love it as much as some other people, but certainly it was a very, very satisfying watch and very interesting, and it's like watching a dance, the way that everybody works with each other. It's beautifully done. And before we go, we should let it go with Frozen 2 finally hitting theatres. It seems like every single parent in the world has been waiting for this movie finally set out so they can shut up about it. It's always difficult to come off the back of a hugely popular movie where, when Frozen came out, nobody saw that coming and it became this huge pop culture phenomenon. Frozen 2 was always going to be, it was going to be difficult to do as well as the first one. Your thoughts on this, first of all, because we feel differently about this film.
Okay. I thought it was horribly, horribly mediocre, and I felt like this is one of those incidences where Disney was doing a cash grab.
Yeah.
There's character wardrobe changes in this movie where you literally just go, oh my God, that's for
merchandise. It's completely fucking pointless.
Yeah. Just for merchandise. There's characters that are introduced, including a cute little iguana that you think is going to play a very big role in the story, does nothing.
Just merch.
And honestly, my big I'm surprised about the lack of conversation about this because I don't know why I'm bothered by this and so many people are sweeping it underneath the rug. You have this story that is going to be about the origins of Elsa and the family. And then you have people of color and Native American characters in this movie. And it does nothing with them. It does nothing with them. Absolutely nothing. Mm. It's like it introduces them, you get these actors to voice them, and you have Sterling K. Brown, for Christ's sake, and his character gets nothing to do.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was the most troublesome thing about this movie, is that you have that, and you do nothing with you treat them as, like, secondary characters, don't give them any backstory, don't give them anything to do, and then at the end, you just, no.
I mean, I liked it more than you. I had fun with it, and there are certain elements. There's one particular number in there where it's played like an 80s music video, and I've got to be honest with you, that was inspired genius. I had a hell of a good time with that. Even at 90 minutes, I still feel it was a little bit flabby. You know, they could have cut 10 to 15 minutes out of it. The costume changes were, again, something for me that kind of grated a little bit. There were lots of elements where, like you say, you just felt this is just for merch. But as a movie, I think it was good. It's not as good as the original Frozen. It's not far off, but I think it really doesn't reach those heights. But for me, it's just the music and the dynamism of the original just wasn't here this time. It didn't have those memorable tunes. I genuinely don't know if the song that's featured in this is going to win Best Original Song when it gets to awards season. That's how it's being pitched, but I don't know if it will. It just wasn't strong enough. I love the original soundtrack. A lot of characters pop in from the first movie for no real apparent reason.
No.
And there are a lot of characters from the first film who had speaking parts who just appear in this movie and don't really do anything. And also, I mean, this is really Josh Gad's movie. And I know a lot was talk. Everybody was talking about this being, as you say, the big Elsa story.
Yeah,
but this was all about Olaf.
They get the shaft. They get the story. The script does nothing with Anna and Elsa.
No, underserved.
It really, especially Elsa.
And it ends
supposed
like
to be
that.
Her story.
Yeah,
and it's like they forget about her halfway through the movie.
Yeah,
but you know, Olaf has all these character developments that never get explained. They're just like, now he could be in the sun. And then they just like write it off in one line of dialogue.
Yeah.
He knows how to read. How? No talk about it. No backstory. Like, I mean, I know they're small minor details, but when you take all those little things and put them together with the other stuff that I was talking about, plus the music, you got a big, messy problem. It felt like a mess.
And one thing I watched when I saw it at the El Capitan last Saturday, and it was an audience, obviously a lot of kids there, and it was interesting to see the reactions of the kids. A lot of kids fidgeting and moving around. So that, for me, was really telling by the fact that the core audience, who were desperate to be there, and really it's aimed at them, they were not as engaged with it as they have been. I remember when I saw Frozen, it was like they were just staring at the screen. It was incredible. But yeah, it didn't hold that younger end of the audience. It's a bit darker, which I think was quite interesting, because that hardcore Frozen audience has grown up a little bit, and so they can possibly deal with something that's a bit more of a demanding and darker storyline. But again, nothing really that interesting was done with it.
I also thought the visuals and the color of the movie wasn't as strong as the first one.
It was not as visually striking as the first one.
Yeah, which is the first time in a very long time that I saw a Disney movie where I didn't want to come out of it and praise the colors and the visuals.
Yeah, it felt very sort of blue tones, gray tones. Yeah. It was very muted, even when they went back to the town. An interesting thing, but I don't think it's particularly worked. I mean, it's going to bring people in, box office, and it's going to do fine. So it doesn't really matter whether it's good or not. But I thought it was fine. I mean, like I say, it's kind of not as good as the first one for me, but I did enjoy it. But it certainly has its problems.
And it's critic-proof. I mean, this is critic-proof. It's like The Lion King. It doesn't matter how I feel about it, how Simon feels about it. This is a movie that, normally we can say on this show, like, if you're interested, go see it. This is a movie where, like, nobody cares what the critics say, and they're going to see it.
Yeah, no, 100%. Talking of time, we've run out of it. A couple of things in the comments. Sky Patterson, Simon, do you think that if Disney continued Frozen as a four-part limited TV series on Disney Plus, it would gain better appeal? Yes, I think it would. I agree, the other Scott M, that Frozen 2 is a cash grab. Do you think there'll be an Olaf spinoff?
No. That little short did very poorly.
Yeah, Jack Dennis, as opposed to making almost a guaranteed $1 billion at the box office, Sky, Disney ain't letting that go.
Nope.
Yep. And Sky's saying, I like the original Frozen film. I didn't love it. I'm not going to see the Frozen sequel. I would rather see a live action film adaptation of the Snow Queen by Disney. Hashtag yes, Snow Queen. Sky Patterson agreed. Everybody agrees that Frozen 2, it's out.
It's out.
Scott Menzel, thank you so much for being on the show today. Where can people find you on social media?
Sure, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Other Scott M.
My name is Simon Thompson. You can find me at Showbiz Simon on Instagram and Twitter. Check out my piece that's coming out next week with Ryan Johnson, talking about Knives Out. That's going to be on Forbes, and also the producer of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I had a great chat with her the other week, actually, so looking at some of the money and stuff around that. And also, there's a little bit of an inside thing on what the new form of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood's going to see when it hits streaming. Could it be split up like Hateful Eight? Could be. Okay, take a look. Have a great weekend, everybody. Have a great week. Have a great Thanksgiving. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time. So take your pants off, watch some movies, have a good time, and don't forget to give those thanks. Thanks, everybody.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.